a non-commercial community radio station powered by our volunteers and our members. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate today.
Hi, this is Jinka, KBOO's web and new media coordinator. I want to ask for your help to support KBOO in our year-end giving campaign and to help spread the word. If you have a social media account, find KBOO Radio on your social media of choice and share our posts. Promote KBOO on your own social media. Tell your friends why you support and encourage them to do the same. You can find more information on the KBOO website, including already written posts and pictures that you can use to share on your social media. Go to kboo.fm/promote KBOO. Thank you.
Join KBOO by December 31st and receive free gifts and prizes from the Give Guide. Just click the donate banner on the KBOO app to keep community radio strong and vibrant in Portland and beyond.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. Coming up next is Art Focus.
Hi, this is Jinka, KBOO's web and new media coordinator. I want to ask for your help to support KBOO in our year-end giving campaign and to help spread the word. If you have a social media account, find KBOO Radio on your social media of choice and share our posts. Promote KBOO on your own social media. Tell your friends why you support and encourage them to do the same. You can find more information on the KBOO website, including already written posts and pictures that you can use to share on your social media. Go to kboo.fm/promote KBOO. Thank you.
Join KBOO by December 31st and receive free gifts and prizes from the Give Guide. Just click the donate banner on the KBOO app to keep community radio strong and vibrant.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is M.K. Guth. She is the director of the Hallie Ford School of Graduate Studies at PNCA and an interdisciplinary artist showing at the Elizabeth Leach and Christine Turney Galleries. Thanks for coming into KBOO again.
Thanks for having me.
So you're an interdisciplinary artist. What are you up to these days?
Well, besides being the director of the graduate school at PNCA, I have a few projects coming up. I have a solo exhibition at the Kristen Tierney Gallery in New York, which opens in September. And that will be more object-based and print-based. And then in next May, I have a project with the UCLA Performance Schedule called Choreography for Reading Aloud, Knowing an Author. And that will be a performance similar to something I did here in town at Reed for Converge 45 a couple years ago. And I also did a similar project at Canada Gallery in New York a few years ago. But the one that's going to be in UCLA will all be around the works of Susan Sontag. UCLA just acquired the Susan Sontag archive. So there'll be 50 to 60 performers reading her journals, her works, her correspondences, the works of the thinkers and authors that informed her work. And sometimes this will all take place in the Powell Library also. And sometimes the work will be read and other times the work will be sung. So an audience member can come through the library and sit and listen to a particular work by Susan Sontag, or allow those various different correspondences, lists, other authors to intersect, bump into each other, and become a cacophony of sound. In a way, it's looking at what makes up an author, what makes up their frame of reference, how they come to their work and their work itself. And the audience will be able to move freely through the library, and maybe you went to a room and some of the work is actually being sung by students from UCLA.
50 people. How many of them are talking at one time?
They're all talking at one time. 50. So 50 to 60
different. So you meant it when you said cacophony.
It will be a cacophony. So, but the Powell Library is pretty big. So there might be a couple people in one area and then another set of readers somewhere else, or sitting up on top of some shelves. You might go into another room and a crescendo of voices might be reading and then move into move more into melody or song. So the tonal qualities shift as you move throughout the space.
When you did it at Reed, was this with Susan Sontag texts?
So every time that I've done this project, I also did it at the Hallie Ford School of, or sorry, at the Hallie Ford Museum in Salem 2 years ago. A year ago. Gosh, it's all like kind of coming together now. Each time the project is a little different depending on what the archives are of that place. So when it was performed at Canada Gallery, the texts that were in the gallery is what were read. So artists' work that had text in it were read, press releases were read, how to run the air conditioner was read. So it was really what text materials resided in that place. Mm-hmm. And so it's different every time at Hallie Ford Museum. It was from the special collections of Willamette University, and that really focused on the history of Oregon itself. And then at Reed, I worked with an assistant in the librarians to pull from a collection of texts from the library. So there were a series of works from the thesis library. So we read Emmanuel Pucci's thesis, which was a defense of fascism, right next to a more recent thesis that was on whiteness. So these different histories are bumping up against each mm-hmm. other. And we read this lovely little book, Poetry of Keats. And the reason that that book was chosen is because in the 100 years that it resided in the library,
no one had
ever checked it out. So in a way, if you're a book, Keats. That's a, you know, that's a pretty rough gig, right? So giving it an opportunity to fulfill its promise.
So UCLA has Susan Sontag's archive.
Yeah.
She's on Twitter now. I mean, I don't know when it popped up a year ago. I started following her diary. And it doesn't come up very often, but it's really nice to be kind of drip-fed high culture. There's another one is like the Diary of Samuel Pepys from London, uh-huh. which is like 2,000 pages or whatever. And you just get little bits of it just served up to it. It's nice. But anyway,
it's intimate.
Your piece, is it going to be choreography? Is it going to be like people dancing?
Nope. The choreography in many ways is more about the audience moving through. So
It's readers.
It's readers.
And the audience moves.
Right. So the readers are stationary. There's usually a couple that might follow you around. At Reed, there was a cat, one of the performers, was reading Simone de Beauvoir, and she was moving through the library, so she might follow you for a bit. And that might happen too. But the audience, and it happens over two nights, there's four different performances. They actually start at the theater and go across the grounds, reading themselves into the library, where then they are being read to. Mm-hmm. So the choreography is both in kind of how the various different narratives are being presented, as well as how the audience themselves moves through this library and this cacophony of voices. It's kind of like turning up the volume on something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So books are usually, they're waiting for you to be read, and they're quiet, and they exist more in our head. And this shifts that to a certain degree, where all of a sudden the thing that resides in our head has like a radio. It's the volume's turned up.
Are you making any physical work? Like people, the Portlanders will remember you did your braids, mm-hmm. that Rapunzel kind of take on Rapunzel. It was in the Whitney Biennial, you know, I guess it was 10 years ago now. Do you reprise that work, or are you making other physical work that people can go see?
So the work for Kristen Tierney is all physical work. It's a series of, I started this project at the Merrill Hurst Gallery in 2012 at the Art Gym. And they, so I call them still lives. They're a book with a set of instructions on engaging in a thematic dinner. So, for example, one of them from the Art Gym was a dinner for John Cage, and there was a dinner for crying and a dinner for a funeral that was based on a L'Embusquet poem called Every Choice Implies a Funeral. And then there's been ones like around revolution and remembering, and so this is a new series of those texts. They come with, there's one, a dinner for a joke, a dinner to tell a joke, and the objects, there's a book with instructions and drawings and images, and then there's usually some other books on the shelf that kind of frame the experience. This comes with a lot of jokes, so that's always nice. And then they'll come with an object to use for the dinner, and this one will come with cups in the shape of red clown noses, so that when you bring the cup up to your mouth, it's like a practical mm-hmm. joke. It's both something you can drink out of and it's funny too. But it's really about having a dinner around how humor operates to, like how laughter and humor can operate to subvert a concern or to help us deal with a traumatic incident. There'll be those books as well as some other drawings and print pieces.
So, MK, you're a teacher of art and also a practicing artist, and you get to travel, you get to see the art world all over the place, but you're based here in Portland. What's the scene like in Portland when you compare it to other places? When people say, oh, what's Portland like for art making? What do you tell them?
Well, I feel like we have a very particular kind of art environment here, where there's a diversity of different types of makers, for certain. There are people who focus more on craft. There's people who are more performance-based. There are more traditional visual artists and installation artists and people who are doing much more kind of interactive and socially, more social practice-oriented art. So it's a really great community of makers, and makers and writers and people who are engaged in a dialogue around the arts. We're doing fantastic in that respect. And because Portland doesn't have the same types of contexts as a city like New York or LA, I feel like work develops in a much more kind of idiosyncratic and maybe sometimes more authentic way.
Context meaning the pressure of...
I mean, context of the history of modernism or of Judson Church for performance. Like, there are all these like very big contexts in a city like New York, and our city doesn't really operate. It doesn't have that type of kind of deep historical context, with the exception of the legacy of craft, which is absolutely a very deep, deeply rooted here. I would say that is alive and vibrant and wonderful. But also there's the very ecology of the arts here. As everybody knows, I'm not telling anybody anything new. We've had a lot of hits over the last 18 months with the closing of OCAC and the shift of the Hoffman Gallery.
At Lewis and Clark.
At Lewis and Clark. And the closing of Merrill Hurst and the closing of the Art Gym. This, just to name a few, right? There's been a lot of major hits that the ecology, that has supported the arts ecology here. So that is definitely something that's on my mind, because I think it's important to support the infrastructure that feeds the arts and art culture and artists. So, you know, those things worry me. I feel like we really have to continue to support our arts organizations, and that means places like PICA and Yale Union and DISJECTA and PNCA. Like, PNCA is not just an amazing art school, and it is an amazing art school that is very much connected to the history of the city. It's also the place that you can go for incredible lecture series. There, Clifford Owen spoke last night, and once the fall starts, the Hallie Ford School of Graduate Studies lecture series happens every Wednesday night. So
these are open to the public?
It's open to the public. So every Wednesday you can come in, and maybe you're going to listen to a talk by the curator Legacy Russell, or we do this year's symposium is on art and environmental justice, and will be the keynote speaker for that is Macarena Gomez Barres. So there are all these amazing voices that you can come and listen to. So I think it's important to support all of these, all of our cultural institutions that create the ecology of our city. And I will also say, we also have some incredible support for our artists in this communities. Oh, the Hallie Ford Fellowships, for example.
What do you get if you're a Hallie Ford Fellow?
So the Hallie Ford Fellows, it happens once a year, and you are awarded a cash award, which I believe this last year was around $30,000. I'm sorry if I don't know that exact amount, but it's substantial. And the Ford Family Foundation also has the curators and critics tours, which are fantastic. So that's bringing in critics and curators into our city that give lectures. Like, let's see, there's one coming up on Sunday at PICA for Allie Temper, who's a curator from the East Coast. Actually, I think she's in Minnesota right now. But also, these curators are doing studio visits with our artists in the community. So that's one of the amazing gifts that we have from the Ford Family Foundation that really, I think, profoundly affects the ecology of the arts here. And there are things like the Precipice Fund, which is why we have these Precipice Fund grants to kind of small art collectives and organizations. Is why we have places, why we have things like First Brick or Physical Education, which is an ongoing project that focuses on performance and interactive work. There's the RAC grants, which are fantastic, that does a lot to support individual artists and organizations, as well as the Oregon Arts Commission grants. So there are a lot of wonderful things that help the infrastructure here, here in Portland. And we have a lot of wonderful spaces like PICA and TBA and Converge. And we have some terrific kind of really established galleries like Russo Lee, Elizabeth Leach, PDX, and Upfer. And there's also a lot of wonderful smaller galleries like Holding, which is also in the Pearl District right across from Upfer, but then there's also places in Southeast like Nationale, Fuller Rosen, Wolf Gallery, or Side Street Arts that really focuses primarily on craft. So in that way, there's a lot of terrific things that support the arts ecology here. But as both an artist and as somebody who teaches graduate students, it's, for me, extremely important that we continue to support the infrastructure of our organizations, because while we have some really exciting younger, smaller galleries and DIY things, those things can come and go, and you still need your institutions that are always showing and always presenting and always providing lectures. They need to stay healthy too. And that's when curators come from other cities to look at our artists. They're going to those curators. They're going to Stephanie Snyder at the Cooley Gallery. They're going to a Mac McFarland at the Center for Contemporary Arts and Cultures, or Kristen Kennedy or Roya at PICA. This is who they're going to in order to find out who they should be looking at.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is MK Guth. She's the director of the Hallie Ford School of Graduate Studies at PNCA and an interdisciplinary artist showing at Elizabeth Leach and in New York at Kristin Turney. So we have this infrastructure, which does the infrastructure include money, like grants, as well as schools and, you know, programming, lecture series, and then space, like people need studios? And does this infrastructure, is it coordinated? Is there anyone like pulling the strings, and, or is it just a big kind of hive mind, you know?
I do not believe anybody is pulling the strings that I am aware of, although I have to look into that and see. No, I think what we have, be it the Ford Family Foundation or the RAC grants, which are, you know, significantly affect artists.
So if you want a RAC grant, I mean, what do? You just apply to RAC with a proposal and say, I want to make this stuff. And what might you get, like $2,000, $10,000?
No, you can get substantially more than that. A RAC, so they have different types of RACs. So there's Oregon Arts Commission has the Opportunity Grant, which can range from anywhere from $3,000, I can't remember the exact amounts, but also you can apply for that. And then there's also the opportunity to apply for a little extra amount, which is supported by the Ford Family Foundation. So that can, you know, that can be ultimately like $8,000 for an artist who might have an opportunity showing in Mexico City, and they're trying to figure out, how am I going to get there? How am I going to get back? How am I going to pay for my stay? How am I going to ship my materials? So that's an incredible resource that we have, the RAC project grants. You go on the website, you look for those dates and when the calls are, and you apply with a specific project. Those particular grants are to focus on Oregon, actually maybe Multnomah County, if I remember correctly. But again, it can help an artist build an entire project. So those are important resources that we have in the city. But you also mentioned something like space. So an infrastructure, just like a forest, needs all these different aspects for it to stay healthy. And, you know, I'm fortunate. I've been in a studio space for, you know, well over a decade, for a long time. Mm-hmm. So my rent is affordable. I have a good amount of space.
What square foot? How much you pay?
I pay under $1 square foot. That's for good. 850 square feet. So I am very fortunate. There is no heat. It's pretty, you know, it's definitely scrappy space. I wouldn't say we have terrific power, but it is a lot of space, and it has profoundly affected the way that I've been able to grow as an artist. I mean, you know, I was previously doing these very large braid projects, and that, just to bring those back, unpack them, and repair them after they've finished an exhibition, that's no, you know, when something's a third of a mile long and like a large spider, it's like I need a lot of space. And so I'm fortunate I have that, because I secured that a long time ago. But when my students are coming out of their graduate programs and they're looking for space, it is a lot tougher. And
where are they going?
And they're grouping together into smaller and smaller and smaller spaces. They are moving outside of the city. So the assistant director of the Hallie Ford School of Graduate Study, Megan Kane Gilligan, she's out in Gladstone, where she has a house and some outbuildings that allow her to have a studio space, you know, near the house. But there are a lot of artists like that that are just simply artists like David Eckhart that are, you know, in deep southeast, or Derek Franklin, where they're looking for places to live, but also places that have other outbuildings. This, it is I feel like more and more artists are moving further and further out in order to secure space to
That's if you
make,
want to
maintain
make something big, though, right? David Eckert makes like giant alpine horns and things like that.
certainly, David makes some monumental works. There is no getting around that. But it doesn't really matter. Even if you're making, you know, a 4x4 inch painting, you need enough space and ventilation so that you don't, like, A, you know, poison yourself, mm-hmm. and B, actually be able to stand back from the work itself. Space and the ability to make work in these spaces is an important part of this ecosystem. And they're all, like I said, they're all different types of artists. You know, a ceramicist needs a different type of space with concrete floors and water and so forth to function differently than, say, somebody who's doing tiny little embroideries. So if you're doing tiny little work, tiny little work, then I guess you're okay. But you can find adequate space. But for the 99% of the other folks, it's really a challenge. And it's meaning that artists that might have had much more close-in enclaves, and there are still some of them left because we have some amazing folks like Ken Unklis that maintain that. A lot of them are moving out. Like one of my alumni is out in St. Helens and has a studio in an old high school, and it's a terrific studio. But I did a studio visit with him the other day, and you know, it took me an hour to
you
get out there.
Discovered where St. Helens was.
Yeah, I mean, St. Helens is lovely, but it's a bit of a drive. So you know, that was almost an hour to get out there, and I, you know, I did stop and get an ice cream cone on the way back, but it was a hot day. So that made it a little longer.
Do you see a new generation of Unklis type people who have a bit of money, a bit of space, and they want to, you know, make things easy for young artists?
I want to encourage that.
But you don't see it happening yet.
I don't feel there's a lot of that. I mean, there's a little bit, but not a lot. Mm-hmm. And the idea that I think there's this misconception that if you offer an artist below rent costs, like, okay, you know, it's not going to be $10 a square foot. It's going to be $4 a square foot. Well, most artists can't afford $4 a square foot, mm-hmm. $5 a square foot. That adds up really fast. And again, you know, for an artist to have a place to live, you know, and a studio, that's a lot of financial commitment. So that studio space has to be affordable. And I know there are a lot of people who really want to support this and offer affordable studio space, but affordable studio space is often far less than what a general developer might think it is. You know, mm-hmm. The assumption is like, wow, you know, if it's below market value, then that's awesome. But in fact, sometimes it's simply not awesome enough. And that's why artists are moving out to St. Helens, to Sandy, you know, Oregon City. So there are certainly new areas of the city that are becoming more saturated with artists, which is fantastic. That's great. But I definitely feel like there's a lot more artists that are spread out. And, you know, there's a group of artists that just graduated from the visual studies program at PNCA, and they've joined forces to take over a space.
Oh, yeah? Where's that?
It's in Southeast. I don't know the exact address. But, you know, they've combined efforts. And then there's a group called Fort from a couple years ago. They did a similar thing where they joined forces in order to take over a space. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is, you know, one of the exciting things about having a place, having art schools in your city, is the artists that come out of those schools become part of that ecology, and the small galleries like Holding and National.
So when you say support, you mean show up for their events?
I mean show up for their events.
Write checks.
And write checks. And you know what? Here's the thing. You don't have to spend a lot of money. PNCA has a new building called, it's an old glass factory. It's beautiful. And there's a new gallery there. In the glass building, and you can support the sculpture facilities there, the MFA studios are there, Applied Craft and Design and Visual Studies, as well as a really wonderful gallery that shows alumni and student work.
So it's a thing to be a member of.
Sure, now. Because then we're going to throw a great fun party once a year for all of the panes in the glass.
Okay, so it's kind of like a PICA thing where you just pay and you get together with other
artists. You can come to all the openings. You have a conversation. So supporting the arts financially as well as showing up, that's always important.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was M.K. Guth, the director of the Hallie Ford School of Graduate Studies at PNCA, and her work can also be seen at Elizabeth Leach and Christine Turney Galleries. Thanks for coming back to KBOO, M.K.
Thank you for having me.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 12 noon. Coming up next is Buscando America.
Please, Mr. Redman, don't put me out in the street.
The Community Alliance of Tenants is working to increase awareness in Washington County of the statewide law SB 608 that was passed in early 2019. It limits rent increases and no-cause terminations for residential leases. There is a temporary bilingual English and Spanish hotline set up for Washington County renters with questions about SB 608, rent increases, no-cause termination notices, and/or lease non-renewal notices. The phone number is 503-644-3007. Again, that's the Renter's Right hotline phone number for Washington County every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. through January 30th at 503-644-3007. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm right in the middle of solving that riddle known as raising the rent.
Join KBOO by December 31st and receive free gifts and prizes.